Thanks for listening to The Adam Carolla Show on Podcast One.
Well, actor Peter Facinelli is going to join us, and we'll talk about him, and then we'll talk about the news. That's all coming.
It's time to check Adam's voicemail.
Hey, Adam. Hey, just finished watching The $6 Million Man, where he's friends with Bigfoot. And now, it's Emergency with one of the best porn stashes in the business. Get it on.
You can leave us a message at 888-634-1744.
Peter Facinelli has joined us once again. He was on in August 2018. Movie The Vanished. It's available now on Netflix, and we'll get into that as well. It's also The Ravine, available Friday on Amazon. So Peter's a busy man. Twilight 1 through 4 and many, many other movies, 6 Feet Under TV shows, Glee, Nurse Jackie. And Father Was a Waiter. So now we have to get into this, Peter, because it's okay.
But I think there's a loophole there, because Peter, are you first generation American?
I am first generation American.
Would you consider that a loophole, Adam?
No, I mean, I wouldn't. Thank you, Gina. No, here's what I'm curious about. I was ranting about this moments ago, which is waiter gets to be a good job where you get, if you're at the right place, you can make good cash, you can work good hours, and you can do pretty well. So it kind of takes the wind out of your ambition sail. But I will make an exception for off the boat immigrants for sure. But Peter, what do you think?
100% off the boat. I mean, my dad, I actually was just talking to him about this last night. He got here from Italy when he was 18 and knew nobody, didn't even speak English. And his brother was here already. And he thought, well, maybe he'll be a carpenter. And his brother said, well, you don't want to sit in a factory and make chairs all day. He said, okay. So then he went down and saw a friend who was a mechanic. And the mechanic said, I'm just a fender bender. And I don't fix like the engines, you know? And then 2 days later, one of his friends from his small town took him to a restaurant and said, hey, there's an opening for just bussing tables and doing dishes. And so he said he made, I think, $6 that day, $6. And he said in Italy, he made $6 a month. Hmm. So for him to make $6 in one day, he thought he was rich. And he never stopped working in the restaurant business. He was one of the youngest waiters, because back then waitering was like prestigious. You had to be very well trained. And in the restaurant business that he was in, he was a waiter for all the Broadway shows in the Broadway district. So he worked at like Mamma Leone's and Cristela's and all these like fancy restaurants where like movie stars would come. He always says to me, I've met more movie stars than you'll ever meet in your life.
I was thinking if he worked at an Italian place, then the accent's awesome. If he works at a Thai food place, it's going to be off-putting. But if he stayed with Italian.
Well, he had to learn English. I mean, the first day he was there, he said that he knew no English, and he kept getting in everybody's way, and they kept saying, watch it, hey, watch it. And he said, in Italian, vache means cow. So he went to his friend. He said, well, why are they calling me cow all the time? I don't understand. So it's kind of a cool story. And he waited for like 40 years. He served 4 presidents. And it was pretty cool.
Was your mom from Italy too? Or did you meet her here?
She was also from Italy. Their towns were about 30 minutes apart, but they actually met in Canada through relatives. Huh? So I'm first generation American, and I have a passport, an Italian passport, citizen. I have a citizenship from Italy, so I have 2 passports, which is kind of cool, because when I got my Italian passport, I grew a mustache and slicked my hair back. So I feel like, I was like, that's my Italian passport. They have my American passport. I feel a little like James Bond.
The, I'm reading here that you lost 30 pounds during the quarantine.
Yeah.
You're the one.
What, what's the plan? What have you been doing? Or what was the mindset first?
Well, I just kind of, I didn't want to go out to the grocery stores. So I just stopped eating and I didn't want to catch COVID. So I just never went out of my house. I haven't eaten since last March. no, honestly, I really thought now I have time. So I can't go out. So I'm going to go in. So I just kind of took care of myself. Ate better. You know, it's interesting because when you're always on the run, I would pick up M&Ms or candy bars, just whatever, you know, you're eating to get you through the day. When you're at home, you start being more conscious about the food that you put in your body. And then I started feeling healthier and then I started running more and working out more. So I feel great. I mean, I don't think I was overweight before, but I was not eating healthy.
Yeah, well, when you work in film and TV, it's so easy to graze because they just lay it all out there. It's kind of a weird. And by the way, if you're doing a film or a TV show and you go like, I'm not going to go to the craft service table and hang out with all the peanut M&Ms and all the chips and everything, and you stay on set, the mountain will come to Mohammed. At a certain point, the chick's like, I made quesadillas and I also made smoothies, and they just show up and they shove it in your face. And now you're just looking at these quesadillas and this little smoothie thing she made in a Dixie cup, and you're like, fuck it.
Yeah, they definitely have a whole job that's there to just bring snacks to people all day because people are on their feet for 15, 16 hours. So it's hard on set, especially when people are, you know, putting food in front of you. But, you know.
Gotta
stay strong.
Yeah. So speaking of movies, The Vanished, which is available now on Netflix.
Have you watched it yet? Have you watched my movie yet?
No, I will watch it because I wasn't informed that it was even on Netflix until moments ago. But I watch Netflix, so I will watch it. Well, tell us about it. We'll paint the picture in our head.
Yeah, I'm excited about that one because I wrote that one and I directed it. I'm in it too, but it stars Thomas Jane and Anne Heche. Jason Patrick also is in it, and he's a fantastic actor. And I'm so blessed to work with great actors. And, you know, I've directed before, but this is the first one I've written and directed. So, you know, it's a movie about two parents who go to this RV park, and then within minutes, their daughter goes missing, and it becomes a who took the kid movie. So it's kind of a psychological thriller. You know, but the audience gets to participate and figure out, like, was it this person? Do you think it's this person? So I love movies like that where you're trying to figure it out along with the parents who might have taken the kid.
How do you sit down and start? And then Brian has a question. Sorry. Sure. But how do you sit down and write that kind of a story? Do you see it on the news and it triggers something, or do you just go full whole cloth?
No, to be honest, I had an RV and I took my daughter when she was five on an RV park trip all the way across America. We went RV park hopping, you know, from New York to LA. Have you ever been RVing? It's a lot of fun.
We took an RV from here to Vegas once to do a show, but that doesn't really count.
It's only 4
that's
hours.
Not the same. We went to
stop and camp at all. No,
no, no, no, no, no. No.
It's super fun. I enjoyed it. Like just going across America and seeing like people change and culture change and like the, you know, houses and structures change. It's like, it was a really cool trip. Anyway, we got to one RV park and it was a little mom and pop shop. And I went to pay the guy and I heard gunshots. And I said, what's that? And he goes, oh, don't worry about that. There's a prison down the road. He said, a couple of gunshots. They do drills once in a while. He said, but if you hear more than 3 or 4, come run into the front desk. So I went crawling back to my trailer and I was like, my RV. And I was like, well, man, I couldn't sleep all night because I thought, well, what if somebody breaks out of prison? And what if someone took my daughter? And what if my daughter went missing in the midst of all this beautiful nature? It'd be like looking for a needle in a haystack. And then that started the process of answering those questions and creating a story based on that trip.
So how many, you went from where to where and how many stops, how many states?
Oh God. I mean, I went from New York to LA and I did 30 days in a motorhome. So, I don't know how many states I might've crossed, but it was super fun. I remember, you know, it's great because you could stop anywhere. I remember stopping in Metropolis, Illinois. It said Metropolis, Illinois, hometown of Superman. I was like, I got to stop there. And it was like, I pull my giant RV into this little town, which was bigger than the, you know, town square. And there's a 60-foot statue like Superman and a little mom and pop like museum that you go into. And it's some old lady's house and they have glass cases with like Christopher Reeve's wig on. So I went in with my daughter who's five and I'm super pumped because I love like stuff like that. And I go into the little museum. I pay the dollar and there's a guy behind the counter. He has a trucker hat on and he's smoking a cigarette. Okay. In the museum, in this like house, and he's reading a wrestling magazine, which is, you can't get more middle America than
right.
that. And I go, hey man, got a super bathroom for my super little girl. Cause she had to go to the bathroom. And he goes, he doesn't even look up. He goes, try the Super 76 across the street. And I was like, that's awesome.
That's your guy.
Yeah.
So 30 days with your 5-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
Is this your, well, it's probably your idea, but it's something that she was excited about. Like I'm picturing myself being with my dad for 30 days.
Five, so I don't think, you know, she wasn't going to say no. I was like, hey, we're going on a vacation, 30 days in a RV. She loved it. I don't think it scarred her too much. Yeah. I mean, it was just a blast. I had a good time. She learned to swim on that trip. Cause you go to these RV parks and they all have like pools and you get in, you know, you should try it, man.
I'm going to try it. Although I got to do it with your daughter, not my daughter, because I had this great scene where...
Honey, this is Uncle Adam.
I took...
She's 24 now, so that'd be a little...
Better yet. Oh. Even better. Even better. I had this crazy scene where I took my daughter and her friends to Malibu. I have a condo in Malibu, and we're going to take them to the beach, and we're going to do this, that, and the other. And we pulled up at like 1 o'clock and they wanted to go into the condo and like get changed into their stuff and then go down to the beach. But as we're heading in, I said, are you guys hungry? Because, you know, we're going to eat later, but maybe not 4 or 5 o'clock. It's like 1 o'clock. And then my daughter's like, I haven't eaten anything. And then the two friends were like, yeah, we could eat. And I said, oh, OK, I'll be super dad. And they went upstairs to change. And I got out the big wooden board and started cutting up the cheese and the salami and the meats and the strawberries and a charcuterie, I think they call it.
Yes.
And I made this beautiful presentation with avocado, everything. And I laid it out and they all came down the stairs. And I said, I made you a beautiful snack. And they said, we're going to the beach. And I said, just have a snack and then go to the beach. We want to go to the beach. I said, well, maybe your friends want a snack. And my daughter said, they're not hungry. They want to go to the beach. I was like, let them answer. Let them answer for themselves. Wow. Do you guys want some cheese?
I have a snack.
Yeah. Like, no, I just spent this whole thing. And by the way, now I got to eat the whole board because I don't know what to do with it. So
charcuterie.
I kept saying, listen, sit down, just have 5 minutes. My daughter's like, no, we're going to the beach. And I'm like, I think your friends are hungry. They said they're hungry. They're not hungry. I'm like, let them answer for themselves. The poor girls are like looking at my daughter. And like looking at me, and I'm like, do you guys want some cheese and some salami? And they're like, and then my daughter would chime in and go, they're not hungry. They want to go to the beach.
They're not hungry.
So, what did I tell you once?
I was like, fuck it. I hope you all drown. And I just ate all the charcuterie.
Anytime you want to make charcuterie, you invite me over. I'll bring my Italian passport and we'll sit down.
Oh, paisan.
Loaves of bread from New York. You know, my parents actually travel with food in their suitcase, they come from LA. And they start pulling out salami and bread and cheeses. And I'm like, they have food here, Mom. And she's like, it's not the same. It's not the same. It's not the same as New York.
Well, they have toothbrushes as well, but you still bring your own.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's an immigrant thing, I think. Whenever I talk to people of immigrant parents, whatever the nationalities, when they travel, we're just talking to some guest whose dad travels with sausage and shows up. Oh, was Jane
Kaczmarek?
Kaczmarek, I think, was saying that her mom brings in. It's from like Wisconsin or something. Like, just brings in the kielbasa.
that just reminded me, I don't know if I've told you this before, but one of my best friends is Chinese, and her mom, when she came over here alone in the 70s, she didn't know anything about the United States. She landed in the Bay Area. She didn't know if they would have Chinese food. So the only carry-on she took from immigrating from China to the United States was on her lap. She had a thing of chow mein and a thing of duck, and just sat quietly from China to San Francisco to FSFO with this Chinese food, because she was so terrified there'd be no Chinese food.
Only to find out they're surrounded by Chinese food.
The biggest Chinatown in the country.
Not the same. It's not the same.
Yeah, not the same.
True.
When you were studying acting, I'm reading here, Peter, that you had William H. Macy and Felicity Huffman as one of your instructors back in the day?
Yeah, they would come in and do guest lectures, yeah.
Wow. And William H. Macy is a little underappreciated, but one of the best actors we have.
Yeah, he's great.
I mean, just him and just watch Fargo.
Yeah.
I should watch that with my son. He wants to watch movies.
Boogie Nights he was in. I mean, many great.
A little Bill.
Heartbreaking in Boogie Nights.
Mm. He was awesome. Yeah, next to the great Nina Hartley.
Speaking of the underappreciated, amazing actors and actresses, Peter, you're in one of my favorite shows, Nurse Jackie, next to my other favorite show, The Sopranos. So I bet you can guess who this is going to be about. And I hear that Edie Falco is going to play Hillary Clinton coming up soon.
Oh.
I'm wondering if there's anything that you took away from working with her new. Like she's such an unbelievable force in her craft. And I'm just wondering, what is something that's just so Edie Falco that you take away from working with her?
What I really respect from Edie is she's so simple. Mm-hmm. And a lot of actors come in, they feel like they have to do a lot and like really push things or enter, you know. But she comes in and her acting is just, there's a simpleness to it, and she doesn't overact, and she's so real because of that. I remember doing a scene with her once, and her line, she says something, and then I say, I'm supposed to say my next line, and she said something. I said, what? Because I thought that she was not acting. So I thought that like she was asking me a question, and then she repeated the line, and I said, what? And she goes, no, you have another line. And I go, oh my God, I didn't know you were acting. Like, it was so crazy that she was like so natural that I had asked her, you know, I wasn't even like, she just kind of draws you in. There's some beautiful simplicity. And not a lot of actors get credit for that. Sometimes when they're simple, they just, because the flashier, you know, actors do the flashy stuff, they get the credit. But like, I love that she gets credit for that because it's a beautiful thing.
What was she doing before Sopranos? Do we know her from many roles?
Bouncing from project to project. I mean, that was her big role, right?
Yeah, that was her breakout role.
Yeah, that was her big breakout role.
I never know, because good actors and actresses kind of disappear into roles, and you go, oh, that was the guy from the thing that I forgot. Oh, I didn't know it's the same person, just because they're good, you know? Yeah. And also because she got that role when she was 47. I mean, I don't know how old, but I just mean she was not young. You'd think someone that talented would have caught on somewhere before then.
Also, yes. I have to ask, and I'm sure you get asked, you've been asked this.
Wait, I'm sorry. Yeah. I have to jump in. She played Marge Gunderson in the TV movie of Fargo.
Oh, really?
In 2003. In 2003.
Wow.
I can't imagine her with that accent.
Okay, I had to get that in.
How uncomfortable/awesome was your first scene with Edie Falco when you grab her boob in Nurse Jackie?
I mean, it's always uncomfortable. I mean, for that character, it's supposed to be uncomfortable. So that's
the point.
It's like it's a hard thing to do because it's not a sexual thing. I don't know if you've seen this.
When he gets nervous, he has sexual
Tourette's, and he grabs boobs, and then he's supposed to not notice that he has like his hand on someone's boob. So it's almost like a no look grab, and then all of a sudden you got to realize it, and then you got to react to it. So you know, and I always felt more bad for them because you know you're grabbing like I have to do to a couple of different women, and you're like grabbing a sexual organ. I'm more uncomfortable. They're more uncomfortable. I feel like, you know, it's a very uncomfortable thing all the way around. And then for rehearsals, you're like, I'm just going to pretend.
That was Peter's suggestion. Hey guys, I got a great idea for this character.
Yeah. Yeah, and poor Al Franken's got to watch and go, really?
And this fucking guy?
And he's getting paid?
Yeah, Jesus he never lost his job either. They never addressed that thing. I think in today's day, they would address that. It was wrong. It was very wrong of that character to grab female boobs, even though it was a Tourette's and he meant nothing by it. It was very wrong. Seriously.
Where is Nurse Jackie? What's it on? What's it streaming on?
It was on Showtime. I think it's on Netflix now.
Is it?
It's fantastic.
I'm going to find it because I never know where stuff is anymore or if stuff is anymore. I don't know where everything's streaming. I actually, I showed my son Windy City Heat, a movie I did with Jimmy Kimmel a million years ago. That's a total goof. It's an insane movie, but it's funny. I won't get into trying to explain what it is, but I had no idea where it was. And I don't think it's anywhere. I think he had to find it on YouTube.
Let me improve your life and everyone listening. Just PSA, website and an app called Just Watch, justwatch.com. Changed my life ever since I downloaded it 2-3 years ago. You just type whatever you want in there. It tells you where it is. It tells you where you can rent it, how much, or if it's streaming. It's all inclusive and it's life changing.
That's a good life hack. Honestly, because I'm like Adam, I'm like, I don't know where to find it. And then you got to Google it. And then you're trying to figure out where it is. And then you're like, well, maybe I could just download it on YouTube or watch it on YouTube. And it's always like grainy on YouTube.
Mm-hmm. And then like,
the image is flipped.
Then I get into this weird place where I kind of feel like my dad or something where it's like, wait a minute, $4.99. Do I already own this? I own this. I'm sure I got a Blu-ray of this somewhere. Like, I'm sure I'm already paying for something. But my son's always like, it's rented again, you know? And I'm like, I know it's somewhere. I'm just going to rebuy it. All right.
You're sitting there going, is it worth $4.99 to go through the cabinet or should I just press the button right now? That's what most people are thinking. Like, I know I have it, but is it worth $4.99 for me to get up right now?
Well, there's also a thing that I got a million years ago. And it's called a kaleidoscope, and it's like a computer, and you just enter all the DVDs.
That's the high roller. That's the high roller.
It was super expensive.
Never heard of it. You got the jukebox for DVDs.
Right. But then what happens is you have 1,000 movies in no particular order, and you have to just go scroll through them. And then, but the weird thing is you end up finding stuff you have no. We were looking for like a Woody Allen movie, and it was a picture of me playing softball in the Dodger Stadium celebrity softball game where like I was the coach and Jimmy was the coach on the other team. And all of a sudden you're watching home movies because you could just load anything you want into this thing. It's a
and you can't put it by alphabetical order. It's just like whatever it is.
One could.
I got to tell you, my son is pretty tech savvy, and I've asked him like 5 times, like, how does this work? And he's like, you just scroll through. But as you scroll through
it, he's fucking with you.
Yeah, I'm sure. Oh no, yeah, he's.
I'm 100% sure. I'm 100% sure that even if you had that on your app or on your phone, you'd be like, I just pressed the $4.99 because it's worth it for me not to have to spend 5 minutes looking for it.
What are you showing us?
Looked up. Can hardly wait. Just Watch streaming on Netflix.
You can where's it playing? Where's it playing?
Streaming on Netflix, and you can rent it on Amazon, Vudu, Apple TV for $3.
Oh, you can watch The Vanished on Netflix. You can watch Can Hardly
exactly.
Wait.
All right.
There's another website I just found. It's called What Movie Should I Watch? And that's awesome because I'm always like going through Netflix, going through Apple, trying to figure out like what to watch. And if you just type in What Movie Should I Watch, you go to the website. And it gives you suggestions and ideas for like and good movies that they're like, I never heard of this movie. This looks so obscure. Check that out because it's fun. Wow. Like it's kind of like, the Wheel of Fortune kind of just going. You just roll it and go, what am I going to watch tonight? And then like 3 of these movies show up and you're like, oh, I've never seen that. It looks pretty cool.
But you don't tell them, here are some other movies I've enjoyed.
No, they just tell you their top picks of what they think you should watch. And so far I've only, been doing it for this last couple of days and they're like 3 for 3.
Oh, really? Wow. Now at some point they're going to get corrupted because there's going to be some graph and Tyler Perry's going to break them off a slice. And then his shit's going to keep popping up when you're innocently looking for your quality films or something.
I might like those.
No, you won't. Peter, want to hang out and do the news with us?
Sure.
All right. We'll take a break. We'll come back with Gina and the news right after this.
Give me the news with Grad. News with Gina Grad. Breaking viral. Weird crime, protest, politics. Give me news with Gina Grad. Stuff they saw on TMZ. Joe Biden. Kamala. Big news with Gina. Gina Grad.
The news with Gina Grad.
Well, just because I had been avoiding this because I thought, well, you know, this could be one of those things that it's done by tomorrow and now it's old news. This ain't getting done by tomorrow. So let's talk about Bodie McStuckface. This is the giant container ship that's still stuck sideways in Egypt's Suez Canal as authorities prepared to make new attempts to free this thing and reopen the waterway and this global shipping hub. It's 1,300 feet. It's called the Ever Given. It's almost as long as the Empire State Building. It has excavators have been scooping sand away at both ends with an estimated 20,000 cubic yards to shift in hope that at high tide, tugboats might be able to pull this thing free. The blockage is holding an estimated 10% of the world's overall trade that normally uses the canal as a shortcut between Asia and Europe. And just as a side note, this could end up affecting gas prices. But also, if the boats don't want to wait in line, they're going to take their chances around Africa. And
pirates. Yes,
they're going around the horn.
Yeah.
I am the captain now.
That's right.
Yeah.
There's a little bit of a risk doing that.
Yeah. My problem with all these stories is when I first hear about them, I go, who gives a shit about what's going on in the Suez Canal? And they go, you see that can you're holding? Yeah. That passed through the Suez Canal to get to your hand. You like those trousers you're wearing? Yeah. That had to be brought through the Suez Canal. Do you enjoy watching pornography on the internet?
You bet.
Who doesn't?
That didn't go through the Suez Canal, but now I know more about you.
But there is a film, a beautiful adult film called The Suez Canal.
I'm sure. So evidently, and by the way, in California, the gas, I bought gas yesterday. It started with a four. We are at $4 and something. We do not need any excuses for that thing to go up any higher.
Well, and also, I couldn't find it. I should have looked harder, but I saw on Facebook, Mike Rowe had this great, very on brand for Mike Rowe, little meme thing. It said something like, he's pro, you know, skilled labor and, you know, maybe college isn't for you. There's other trades to go into.
Sure.
And 10% of the world's cargo is all relying on the hands of one skilled guy who's digging out this sand trap. So really, let's give these guys credit where credit is due.
You can make the counter argument about the fucking pilot.
Yeah. I mean, the skipper. Yeah. When did they? I got it. When?
Captain.
What is the? I know the history of the Panama Canal to some degree. But I don't know really the history of the Suez Canal. So I would like to know more about that. The Panama Canal, this is America at her finest. I think the French started it. And after about 2 years, we're like, all right, quit fucking around. And we showed up and we knocked it out. Everyone got malaria and died because, you know, that's the way we used to roll back then. But I think
have you ever seen the Panama Canal? Have you ever gone to see it?
No, never been there.
I got to go check it out.
You drove your RV through it?
I drove my RV to Panama.
How was it?
It turns into a boat, and I went down the Panama Canal. It's pretty amazing. Like they dropped the ocean, like the water for the boats. It raises and rises depending on
who, in the gates.
Pretty incredible the way the structure of the whole thing. Well, I have no idea what the Suez Canal is either.
Yeah, I don't know.
Everything I know is that Billy Joel once told me there was trouble in the Suez. That's it.
It's kind of interesting because I think the gates are there to kind of get you uphill. Like the water, the elevation may not be the same from one end to the next. Yeah. So how do they get you moving sort of against the current, so to speak? And I think they use the gates that way. I mean, it's incredible. It's incredible that they built that thing in 1914 or whenever the hell they built. I mean, it was a long time ago, but what a crazy ambition. Like, everyone before you had just been sailing all the way around the horn. And you're like, if we could just take a few miles here and dig a trench, we could cut across.
Shortcut. Yeah.
And did you know
a long time to get there? It's a long time to do that.
That's right. And I think I'm right. This might be a bit of a Snapple fact, but did you know that the Statue of Liberty was originally supposed to be at the entrance of the Suez Canal?
Oh, really?
Well, it's supposed to be an Egyptian woman with a light.
Oh, really?
I didn't know that, but it makes sense because the French who gave us that were the ones who were originally dispatched to do the work.
We were re-gifted the Statue of Liberty?
They didn't want, they passed. We got sloppy seconds.
What the fuck?
I don't know how it happened, but that's who it was for.
I think there was a situation where the Americans came in and took over the canal. You can find that, Max Pat. I don't know where it is, but if memory serves, the French worked on it for a long period of time and we didn't think they were making enough progress. So we showed up.
Ah, there it is. There's the Suez Canal.
And then we're looking at the Suez Canal. What year's the Suez Canal? That's later. Max Spada, you got a computer?
Yeah.
What year?
Do you want... Wait, what do you mean
the
what
Suez
year?
Canal.
Okay. What year is
it
began,
today?
What construction began 1859, completed 1869.
Oh, really? It's that old.
Wow.
So I was looking at the Statue of Liberty.
So. Oh, the Panama Canal then must have been after that. Yeah, who knew? I guess we just didn't care about that region of the world back then.
Look how skinny that thing is. Well, I mean, how does this not happen more often?
Yeah.
Go ahead. I sound like an idiot, but in 1859, were there even Western states? There was nothing to ship to.
Yeah, I guess so.
How about a canal through Florida? That's what we need, right? From one side of Florida to the other?
Yeah. I'd take that.
I just let it drift away.
All right, the Panama Canal. What year's that, Max Pata?
I mean, I'm not finding a date right away. Let me read more on it.
They play things pretty close to the vest when it comes to dates and canals. I know how the internet rolls. Not so fast, hotshot. What are you doing with that information? Let's just say it was
1881, it looks like.
1881?
That's what I'm seeing here.
All right. All right, sorry. Go ahead, Gina Grad. Yeah, got it.
Yes.
It's kind of, I don't know, don't you guys like those stories like, oh, it's a giant container ship and it got sideways and now it's blocking the canal versus like a nut job dressed up as the Joker walked into a movie theater and opened fire on
it. It's quaint.
It's quaint. Like, I miss these. These are stories from my childhood. You know, somebody fell down a well. A ship got lodged in a canal. You know, these are my childhood stories. Now it's all just nut job guy walked into supermarket, started shooting, you know, it's a
turning on
massage parlor. Yeah. It's so goddamn depressing.
It looks like it opened. Sorry. That's maybe when they started building it and constructing it, but 1914 was when it looks like it opened.
That sounds about right. Yeah.
Sharon Osbourne, no longer a part of The Talk, the CBS show on daytime, that airs on daytime. I have the entire statement from CBS, and I'm going to read it word for word. It's about a paragraph. The events of March 10th broadcast were upsetting to everyone involved, including the audience watching at home. As part of our review, we concluded that Sharon's behavior toward her co-host during the March 10th episode did not align with our values for a respectful workplace. We also did not find any evidence that CBS executives orchestrated the discussion or blindsided any of the hosts. At the same time, we acknowledge the network and studio teams, as well as the showrunners, are accountable for what happened during that broadcast, as it was clear the co-hosts were not properly prepared by their staff for a complex and sensitive discussion involving race. During this week's hiatus, we are coordinating workshops, listening sessions, and training about equity, inclusion, and cultural awareness for the hosts, producers, and crew. Going forward, we're identifying plans to enhance the producing staff and producing procedures to better serve the hosts, the production, and ultimately the viewers.
Sharon got it just in time.
When does it start to sound bizarre, Orwellian, and surreal? You know what I mean? That was a fucking nothing burger. It was an argument involving a white person and a black person, and it was an argument that involved race to a degree, but it was really her just saying, I believe Piers Morgan.
Well, and she said, isn't he allowed to just not like her? Does
yes.
it have to be about race?
Well, the scariest, I'll tell you the scariest part of this whole weird Orwellian wished out in the cornfield, fucking everyone as a coward time we're living in now is how everyone has to go to like re-educational camps. Like when they start getting this wordy shit about we realize that many people were hurt and many people were offended. Who the fuck saw that? By the way, anyone who watches that show is unemployable. So we shouldn't have a lot of interest in what that person does because it's 1 o'clock, it's Tuesday, and you're sitting on your fucking fat asses watching Yentas go at it about nothing. But by the way, that's the conceit of the show. We're going to mix it up. We're going to have a diverse cast, right? And then they're going to bring their diversity of opinions to this. And you can watch. Was anyone in the audience offended or put off? Or they're all
according to the statement, they were hurt and upset.
They're all on methadone. They're all methadone. It's an unemployable group of retarded people who would go to. Do you know a person that would go to a live taping of The Fucking View? You have to be on methadone. You have to be an ex-junkie, and you're on the fucking dole. So who Peter cares what these people think? Oh, yeah. It's like you have to be an Italian waiter serving the Broadway crowd or something. What the fuck?
My dad might have been there, and I think he was offended. So, but I do think that. You know, there's always room to educate.
No, no room. Not over nothing. Not over nothing. That's just a power grab. They just want
to educate right now.
They just want power. That's all this fucking is. Listen to me. Educate everyone. What do you have to? What do we need? We have to break off in discussion groups. What the fuck happened? Sharon Osbourne disagreed with this other person. I don't think she disagreed.
I don't know exactly what happened because I didn't follow that. So, but I'm all for like, hey, if we could be a better world and people are offended and you can educate and
I'm with you,
better, then that's all good.
How much of this is guiding us toward a better world?
I mean, listen, if we can learn how not to offend people, and I think that's our. We should do that,
right? But
that would be a better world.
You're working under the assumption that. People want to not be offended. I think people want to be offended. I think that's where we're at now.
That, like, for me, like, I want to be educated. If I'm doing something that is hurting somebody's feelings or offending somebody, like, I would want to be educated on that.
Right. Well, but if you lived with someone who never stopped wanting to be offended, then eventually it would turn Orwellian. Nobody.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know anybody who doesn't want to stop being offended.
Oh, half our society. Wants to be offended now. Like, there's no reason to do anything about this. They shouldn't have taken a hiatus or done anything.
Well, and it's like they used to, who was the, who said, you know, well, I know porn when I see it. You know, I can't tell you.
Supreme Court Justice.
But this is the same thing. This is scary. You don't know until you're getting your walking papers. But
well,
on the other hand,
we saw it, Peter. It was a zero burger, just so you know. I mean, I'm not defending someone who was overtly offensive.
But to Peter's point, there was a recent and we've talked about this phrase a lot, this wording. There was a recent Sarah Silverman podcast where she was talking to one of her friends. And, you know, at that moment, they were like, oh, my God, master bathroom. Do you know where that comes from? Saying master bedroom, master bathroom. And he told her, and she goes, oh, yeah. OK, I just won't call it that anymore. I'll call it the main bathroom. Like, it took zero calories for me not to call it the master bathroom. So, you know, I'm saying that to your point, Peter, like it doesn't have to be a calorie burner. But yeah, on the other hand, like Sharon's out of a job and it's debatable to some if she did anything wrong.
Well, the problem is now there's this new thing where the person didn't do anything and then they go, yeah, but there was other stuff they did like behind the scenes in the dressing room stuff. So we should just get rid of her. It's kind of like, all right, so, but we're still basing it on this one interaction, right? Well, there are other things that she did. Well, then what are those things? I don't think she wants to be there anyway. And I think she's going to get cashed out.
Yeah.
But it's the Orwellian part is where they have to offer up. The network has to do the prepared statement about the audience was offended and they're going to go break off in discussion groups and figure out how to heal themselves. Yeah. Comical.
Well, Alex Trebek from beyond the grave is still doing great work. As we learned a while back, he donated a lot of money to preserve land in the Santa Monica Mountains, and he's still doing such things. He's now going to grace a complex. There's going to be a plaque in his honor that's dedicated to putting a dent in an issue that is near and dear to him and, of course, anyone who lives in LA, the homeless crisis. So the folks over at Hope of the Valley Rescue Mission will honor the late Jeopardy host by naming a brand new homeless shelter the Trebek Center. Alex and his wife Jean donated $500,000as a gift to this construction project, which is about to convert what used to be a 23,000 square foot roller rink in the San Fernando Valley. Ooh. Do you know which roller rink this is?
Is it the Moonlight one? Moonlight roller rink? That's the only one I know in the San Fernando Valley.
It didn't say.
I got to see where it is. There used to be a place called Flippers. Flippers was in Hollywood. And I know because they filmed the Charlie's Angels episode there, which I saw recently with Ed Begley Jr. playing the champion couples roller skating. Every third episode of Charlie's Angels was they were having a dance competition or a roller skating, and the other couple would get abducted. They'd abduct the other one. So I was like,
sure.
It'd be a common problem.
It was a $3,000 prize, you know? So, okay, we'll get a van and we'll abduct the lead couple, or we'll abduct the woman so that we can win the competition. And then the angels have to join the competition. That's the whole.
Oh, yeah.
Sure.
And I'm sure they're Cracker Jack skaters. This was in Northridge, this roller skating rink.
Yeah, there's a, God, roller skating rings or rinks. Wait a minute. Is it a rink?
Yeah,
it's
a rink. Roller skating rink?
You skate rink. In a rink.
Yeah, rink.
You skate in a rink, but you
usually in a rink.
You go in a rink, but yeah, you skate in a rink. Yeah, there used to be
Norwegian or something.
There used to be roller skating rinks and drive-in theaters, like dotted the San Fernando Valley, and not so much anymore. Well, anyway,
drive-ins are making a comeback. People can't go to the movies as much, so I think they're starting to open up a couple more.
Well, that'll be a good byproduct of this horrible time we're living in.
I was just going to say, I'd never been to a drive-in movie in my life until last year in the pandemic.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Really?
Fun? Did you enjoy it?
Oh, it was the best. We had a great time, yeah.
You ever been to a swap meet at a drive-in theater?
No.
Is that a thing?
Oh, yeah. They have
swap meet. What's a swap meet at a drive-in theater?
I think I'll do something during the day with that.
Yeah, man.
I thought you meant you drive through the swap meet like it's a drive-in.
An interactive
experience. Roll down the window and buy stuff.
No, that is for the farmer's market, and those are for the elderly drivers. This is like the big swap. It's been long enough. We can joke.
I get it.
This is like a big one out here they have, right?
I knew the one in Santa Fe.
Santa Fe, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah, they have like the drive-in swap meets. Yeah.
Wow.
I haven't been to a swap meet in a while.
So just in case you're driving through Northridge, this is going to break ground on May 15th. It's going to be a 107-bed housing facility. It'll serve as what's called bridge housing between the streets and permanent housing. And it's all thanks to Mr. Trebek.
With so many homeless people living under bridges, is bridge housing real like master bedroom? You know what I mean? Is that really appropriate?
Almost way out.
Yeah, we should work.
That's a simple change. We could change that.
Yeah. That's right.
But I think we need to do something. I was just talking to my fiance today. There's so much homelessness in LA. I mean, why don't we spend like $2-3 more on tax, like a homeless person tax or something? It's like $3 out of someone's check. And for $2-3, we can like get people off the streets and help them. Like, I don't understand why we're not doing more to help people. And it's just becoming more and more rampant, it seems.
Well, that's provided they want to get off the streets. I think the problem is a lot of homeless have a lot of mental issues and a lot of addiction issues. And like we cleared out Echo Park And they said to a lot of them, we'll give you a hotel room, and a lot of them passed.
Well, the pushback is coming from a lot of sides, because in the Echo Park situation, there were protesters who showed up and said, don't remove these homeless people. Even they were, like you said, they were offering them place to stay, offering them bridge housing, whatever it was. I don't think it's a money issue. I think it's a willingness issue from a lot of sides. You know what I mean? There's a lot of people who, frankly, don't want this to not be a problem.
Ooh, what if instead of bridge housing, we went with loser dorm? Would that be, or
well,
probably not?
Group that, but I don't think it's going to do.
All right, well, I'll keep working.
Yeah, what else you got?
I'll keep working on it. Yeah, sad, sad but true. But thanks, Alex Trebek from
the
Brave.
Yeah, he's the best. What are we going to change masturbate to?
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I got rid of master lock.
Wait, we have the answer. In Idiocracy, set in the future, all this is, I'm baiting.
Oh, I'm baiting. Yeah.
There you go.
That's right. Perfect. Obviously, they got to master.
That's right. Speaking of which, the Republican governor of Utah has signed legislation requiring all cell phones and tablets sold in the state to automatically block pornography.
What?
Governor Spencer Cox claims the measure would send an important message about preventing children from accessing explicit images online. Apparently, no immediate steps toward implementing this have actually happened. Actually, five other states have to enact a similar law, I think, to get this passed. Critics are calling the move a significant intrusion on the First Amendment right to free speech. But this is Utah, and they kind of play by their own rules.
What do we do with all the access to porn? Like, do we do... I got a 14-year-old son, you know. Do I do that move? Like a lot of guys I know, they go, well, my dad, he just blew cigarette smoke into my face until I threw up and I never wanted to smoke.
I see where this is going.
Do we?
Yeah.
Do I just sit down with my son?
Of his life?
We're going to watch porn until we both throw up.
Can do.
And let me tell you, it's going to take a while for pops. So get out the toothpicks and the Visine. Because we're going full Clockwork Orange.
Maybe that's why people are going into the schools and shooting people. They're watching too much porn. I don't know. When I was growing up, it was like, if you wanted to see boobs, it was in a plastic sealed like magazine. And you had to like sneak in and like buy a Coke and hope the guy would sell you something. But it's so accessible now. And it's, I guess, look, it's up to parents to like put some sort of lock on their kids' phones. So it's I could see why there's a debate there where it's like, you know, there's a First Amendment right where people should have the right to, but the accessibility is, you know, it's scary that you could just literally just type in the wrong word and then, you know, the Pandora's box gets open and your 7-year-old child or 8-year-old child sees things that they shouldn't.
I think we're kind of at the point where everything is everywhere. It's all accessible. It's all free. It's in everyone's hand. Like our only choice is to like go full like Buddhist with our kids. Like you go, like it's now us against them. Like you're going to have to get your brain in shape to deal with this shit storm that we've kind of this digital society that, and there's lots of, I'll screw the story up a little, but a lot of this Silicon Valley stuff, they're like, oh, we designed this shit to be addictive. Forget about porn. We designed this stuff to fuck with your kid's brain and to spend as many hours as possible staring at a Facebook page. Like, we're going to have to just go like Jeremiah Johnson with our kids. Like, we're going to the fucking woods. Take your shoes off. Like, the part where we can keep you away from shit. Yeah. That was our generation. Our generation was, we're going to take the Penthouse magazines. We're going to put them behind the counter. We're not putting them up front with the Sports Illustrated. You'd compromise and go, well, look at the Lowrider magazine. I see some side cleavage there, whatever. Yeah. But it's like they could physically get it away from you. There is no counter to put anything behind anymore. We're going to have to just train all the customers at this point.
How old are your kids before you gave them a phone? Where they, you know, because it feels like now when my oldest had a phone, it was like 12. Or 13. And then now the middle one was like 10. And then all of a sudden it was like 9 for the, or 8 for, so it's almost getting younger and younger. And then you see like 5-year-olds with, you know, 4-year-olds and 5-year-olds with phones. So like, what is the right age to go, okay, you can have a phone, you can have the iPad access, because there is, unless, you know, if you don't have a lock on it, it's scary what they can get into.
I know one of the most insane conversations I ever had was with my daughter when she was she's probably about 9, maybe 10, and her little friend who's 9 or 10. And I said, my daughter was like,
charcuterie. Going, she said something about charcuterie.
She was going away on the phone, and I said to her friend Cammy, I said, do you have a phone? And she's like, I'm not mature enough for a phone. And I was like, oh, my God. And then she told me her favorite film was Master and Commander.
Jesus.
And I was like.
And then you daughter swapped.
This was a 70-year-old progeria.
Yes, I know. I was like, oh, my God, how damn mature can a human being be? Master and Commander, but mature enough for Master and Commander, but not mature enough to own their own
phone.
Yeah. All right, Gina, let's bring her home, shall we?
You got it. I'm Gina Grad, and that's the news.
Gina!
That was the news with Gina Grad.
Well, last but not least, there's Geico. Do you own, do you rent your home? Well, sure you do. And you want to save some money? How about you get your bundle going with Geico? Take your homeowner's or your renter's insurance and bundle it up with your automotive policy. Go to geico.com. And see just how much you save when you bundle. Get a quote and see just what they can do for you when you get your bundle on at Geico. That is geico.com. Peter Facinelli of the famous Facinelli. Famous Facinellis. The Vanished is available now on Netflix. And Thomas Jane, not a bad get. Anne Heche and Jason Patrick as well. And then the Ravine available Friday on Amazon as well. Peter, am I missing anything?
No, Ravine is coming out Friday. It's a movie about forgiveness. And it was a tough movie for me because in that movie, my character ends up like killing his family and he's best friends with Eric Dane's. And then Eric Dane is left putting those pieces together. Like his best friend snapped. And then what do you do with that when your best friend does something so horrible? How do you find forgiveness for that?
Well, you can find out Friday on Amazon. So, Peter Facinelli, thank you much for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me again.
We're going to be in Nashville at Zany's April 14th doing a live pod over there. So you can just go to amcarolla.com for all the live shows. Until next time, Adam Carolla, Gina Grad, Bob Bryan, and Peter Facinelli saying mahalo.
Follow the Adam Carolla Show on Twitter at Adam Carolla Show. Follow us on Twitter at Adam Carolla. Also on Facebook and Instagram at Adam Carolla. You can leave us a voicemail at 888-634-1744 and pick up any or all of Adam's books at adamcarolla.com.